Cool. Awesome. Rusty, live on the pod, Tom Hartley, looking quite cozy in your bedroom, living room?
Living room, yeah.
Nice. How you doing, mate? You good?
I'm very good, thanks, Rusty. Very good. On the wind down for Christmas. Enjoying things at the moment.
Cool. And I'm seeing you tomorrow at Google, so that's exciting for you. You got your best clothes on already for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Be suited and booted for that one.
Nice. So it feels like we've known each other forever. It's not that long, is it?
It was about Easter this year. I think Suzanne Brown put us in touch before an event at Birmingham. I think we've done quite a lot together and spoken an awful lot across the course of the year. But no, it hasn't been long since we've known each other.
I've been stalking you since Easter. That's good for me to know.
What? I wasn't going to say that myself. But
do you want a quick explanation of how we've ended up with you in your living room, me in my bed, on mobile devices?
Well, I guess the explanation could go two different ways. I work at Arsenal. So my main role at the club is the women's development manager. So I look after all women and girls football up until the academy level, and then support girls with that transition into academy football. I guess my role isn't just the role at Arsenal. There's a real diverse range of projects that I work on, whether that's from working in prisons as part of a big prison project called the Twinning Project. Been really fortunate this year to kind of work around the world in a few different countries and cultures, which has really broadened my eyes and views on coaching. And then I guess as well, more so for me, I'm really interested in shared worlds, what we as football coaches can perhaps learn from the world of rugby, the world of other sports, the things completely unrelated to sport, but what things as coaches we can take away that will enhance our practice and our delivery. So I think with the work that you do and the work that I do, there's lots of crossover, especially around coaching and making everything as player-centered as possible.
What are your views on coaching? So you said adapted some of my views on coaching. What are they?
For me, I think over the last year and a half, the way I see myself as a coach and the way I see the role of the coach has really evolved. I always used to think I was player-centered, but recently I've been studying towards an MA in early years development, and it's really shown me when actually there's so much you can do to put the player at the heart of the process. Even, I guess, work you can do to think about what your role as a coach is. Do you have to command and lead things all the time, or do you have to? Can you give more ownership over to the players? I think a few years ago, I maybe viewed myself thinking, right, am I a good coach if I can remember person in position A passes to position B, runs to position see what being a good coach is, it's probably not me. But as my experiences have developed and I've kind of tried to immerse myself in different worlds, I've actually felt, well, actually by creating an environment for players to try things out, to find out stuff about the other team, to play about the fear of failure, and to create an environment where players can be creative, then actually you're doing much more as a coach for the young people you're working with than by being that person front and centre all the time.
Nice. And what's been the impact of doing a master's in early years development? What kind of, and what's been the impact on you, but also what's the, if you could go, look, here's the two or three things that I can condense what I've learned so far down to make Rusty's life better. What would those two or three things be?
I guess one of the things I've been really curious about is play and different types of play, and then how we use play as a coach. And I think before I started the masters, I'd have considered play as just almost one dimensional thing that perhaps we could use sometimes, or it's what happens when we put on an inverted commas match at the end of a practice. But play can be so much more than that. I think in the UK alone, there's 16 defined different types of play, and they all have different benefits and trade-offs. For example, something that I love and I've just really got into this year is rough and tumble play. So activities where you've got players pinning each other to the floor, it's just fun and they love it, and it's physically intense, but they've got to be creative and find a will to win, and you create mismatches. You put the bigger players against the smaller players and challenge them in ways that they can find a creative solution. and it doesn't look like traditional coaching, and it doesn't look like perhaps what a traditional player development environment could look like, but it's really right for the players. And even from a top line, it's great fun for them to do this, through to actually crawling exercises. Crawling and racing has fantastic benefits for brain development. I'd never have thought about this. And the next level of thinking, and it's not necessarily doing complicated things for the players. It's doing simple things really well. So like I say, rough and tumble play is massive. Free play. I think coaches, maybe players as well to an extent, or young people, should I say, find free play a little bit scary, where your role is very different. You step back, you set up a practice, or you just set up an area and let the young people do what they want to do in that space. And then your role goes from managing to noticing. That's massive. And I think quite quickly you can then start to see, well, does this player start? Go and do some stuff with the ball. Who seeks out someone to play against? Who just wants to smash the ball into the goal? And all those things are fine. It gives you a better indication about what motivates them and why they want to keep coming back to practice. So if then you can take that information and frame your coaching sessions around the things you've noticed they enjoy a lot, then you create something that truly is player-centered. And that's just something that, for me, I'd never have thought about before doing this. So play's big. The other thing that for me is really stood out is kind of work around self-determination theory. So giving players autonomy and loads of choice. So that could be choice of practice type, or that could be choice within a practice. And the more diverse types of decision you can help the players make in a practice, I think it has a huge developmental impact on them. There's that autonomy, there's that opportunity to see how they're getting better, and then to frame that in a route that supports them, because actually what success looks like is probably different for every single player in the group. So if you as a coach can understand that, but then find ways of differentiating or individualizing what you're trying to get out of the practice, then that's magical for the kids. I think, look, if you've got a group of 16 players, you're not going to do something very specific for each player every session. And a coach much wiser than me once said to me, well, just pick three. Just pick three this week and make that the session for them. And then you evolve that over the weeks. That's why it's long-term player development. It's not we're going to coaching tonight. And that, for me, simplified the whole process to say, well, actually, yeah, we can make learning really player or person specific, but we don't have to worry about everyone every session. We can put on a practice which has got loads of benefits for lots of people, but really make it special for some.
Mate, wow, lots going on there. One thing, rough and tumble play, I'm assuming you mean the sock game, which I love. But yeah, it's amazing, especially with the how you can convince them that they've done a full contact session by just allowing them to crawl around and steal socks off them, as an example. The second thing that I thought was interesting, so exactly what you said about noticing and seeing what it is that motivates them. Ed Coakland told a good story where he said, look, kids, you're going to come up with your own football formation. And they came up with something like 1-1-4-4. And he said, you know, clearly in my brain, it didn't make sense. However, when you realise that they all want to score, then it makes perfect sense. So they just wanted more people up front, so more people would have opportunities to score goals, because that's what they were really excited about. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, but just by doing that, though, you find out a bit more about the young people that you wouldn't have found out before. You see what excites them about coming to training, and they'll also learn stuff by doing that. They'll let in some goals and they'll realise, I need to reshape. And you said it yourself at the start, we're going to Google tomorrow. And that's it. As coaches, we can be Google for the players far too many times. We just give them an answer instantly, but we don't let them join the dots themselves.
Yeah, true story. Well, where have you been? So you spoke a bit about kind of shared worlds. Which places have you been to in the last 12 months that you thought they're cool places I would recommend people go and spend time with in those places or with those people?
Yeah, Zambia has to be one that really stands out for me. Pardon?
go big, Zambia. I thought you were going to say, you know, like a little club down the road. But of course, tell me about Zambia.
Zambia has to be one of the most amazing experiences as a person and as a coach. So Swindon Town Community Foundation do lots of work out there, almost on an annual, biannual basis. And in the past, it's been really focused around the young people in Zambia. So they go and put on football tournaments, lots of coaching sessions for the children going to schools. But this year, they wanted to theme it around coach development and give the coaches, I guess, some more resources and some more tools to have a better impact or a bigger impact of what they do. And I found it so humbling that you've got people who volunteer so much of their time and have so much enthusiasm for the sport. And football, my God, it's so much more than football. It's just the heart and soul of the community. One thing that stood out for me, they across Livingston, where we were in the south of the country, across the town, there's probably 15, 20 football pitches, which look, they're just dust spaces. But one of the main guys out at the club we work with, he's renamed his home ground as the County Ground, which is the same name as Swindon Town's ground. I've never seen so many Swindon Town fans outside of Swindon. it's bonkers. But one thing that grabbed me, that they have this enthusiasm, but they lack in some of those resources or skills that maybe we take for granted. Coaching interventions, for example. The number one coaching intervention we found really quickly was stop, stand still, slap around the back of the head, do it like this instead. And it's funny because it links really closely with their culture. It's hierarchical. If someone more, an elder or someone more senior than you tells you to do something, you do it. So the concept of asking the player some questions or just giving them some nuggets to follow rather than giving them the answer and telling them was just a game changer for them. And a moment for me that stood out was we were talking about different learning styles and different learning preferences. So visual, for example, we were talking about how we might use a whiteboard here, tactically draw a plan on or show where the players might move and explain, look, obviously you might not have the resources here for every coach with every group to have a whiteboard, but if you can find something to show the players, that's really important. And the next day, the coaches held a football tournament for about 500 local people. And one lad had found a piece of wood and was etching his X's and O's onto the wood with his children sat around him. And I thought, wow, that's fantastic. And it showed me, like, as a football coach, what football or what sport can do for people. It's just massive. And another moment that really stood out, we got invited to watch an under-21s game. So it was an end of season, top of the table clash, winners won the league. And the game was blood and thunder. Half the boys weren't wearing boots. Half were, they just threw absolutely everything into the game. Final whistle blew. Dropped to his knees, said a prayer, and then everybody went into the middle and had a huddle. And there was all 22 players in together. And I spoke to someone and I said, what's this? Why is this important? And he said, well, when we're out on the pitch or at war, it means absolutely everyone, everything to everyone. But when we do this, it brings us back together as a community. And if we don't work together, then we have nothing. And I was like, wow, it's just, again, things we take for granted in the Western world, just it's so important to them. So that was incredibly humbling, amazing, amazing trip.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, look, I see a lot of, I do start to see more and more huddles where people are in with other teams or they bring in families as an example. I think we think it's quite weird because it's often, we still keep the tribal nature after the match, whereas I love that thought that if we don't work together, then we have nothing really. Where else? I mean, Zambia, obviously, pretty cool.
Tell
me about the prison project while we're on this, then tell me a bit about the twinning stuff.
Yeah, so the twinning project for me has possibly been if not one of the best and most rewarding pieces of work I've been involved in. I've coached for 20 years and I've never seen an impact that sport can have on people like this. So the twinning project, about a year old, it was set up by a guy called David Dean, who was the vice chairman at the Arsenal and at the FA. And his vision is to link every professional football club in England, plus some rugby and plus some non-league football, with a prison. And the aim is that you use sport and you use football to go in and teach some skills and teach some sport-specific stuff, but also some human behaviour-related skills, with the aim of reducing the risk of reoffending and helping these people find employment upon their release. And for me, if you'd have said to me a year ago, Tom, you're going to go and work in prison, I remember when I had the call saying I was going to do it, I thought, this feels so far away from my comfort zone and my area of expertise. And I'm sure probably a very normal feeling going into a women's prison for the first time. Extremely nervous, not quite knowing what to expect. And as were they, and I found quite quickly that for some of these people, their relationships with men at best were complicated. So there was a real feeling of like, we're not sure about this guy on day one. We didn't know what to take. So the twinning project itself, where the delivery was structured, I'd go in and spend a couple of hours in the classroom, and we'd do some football related activities such as qualities of a great coach. So they would explain, they would kind of come up with a definitive list of what they felt were the top qualities, but then look within themselves and say, well, actually I've put communication here and actually I'm all right at that. I could be better, but that's something I'm quite good at, or patience or whatever it might be. And then we'd go out onto the pitch. I'd coach for a bit, and then the women would have the opportunity to design and deliver a practice. And it really didn't matter what the practice was, but those qualities we spoke about inside, that's when they came to life outside. And I have to admit, it hasn't been an easy process in many respects. Emotionally, it was really difficult. You leave. And whereas I think people who've never been into a prison before, so the vast majority of us, you look at that environment and you think, well, it's just full of people who have done bad things, and prison should be a punishment throughout. And I appreciate for some that it could be quite divisive, thinking, well, hang on, people get sent to prison, then they get some football coaching, that doesn't add up. But going to prison is the punishment. Whilst being in prison, it should be an opportunity to help people recalibrate, rehabilitate, and be in a better position when they come out. Most people who are coming out of prison don't necessarily have somewhere to live, don't have a bank account, don't have a means of earning money, and that's why the reoffending rates are so high. So if sport, and there's some research to show that actually sport acts as almost an accelerator to bring out kind of those key skills, that communication skills, teamwork, resilience, in a sporting environment than if it was done in any other way. So there's research being developed at the moment, but it can make such a difference. It's phenomenal. It makes me grin from ear to ear whenever I can talk about it, because it is so rewarding and so impactful.
Yeah, and it provides a social network for people as well. So one of the things, so Don Palaccio at Richmond Rugby Club's been doing this as well from a rugby point of view, and just then connecting people up with rugby clubs when they leave. So he's been doing a bit of work at Felton Young Offenders, and the evidence says, so if you look at a country like Holland, where their first instinct is to connect with them with sports clubs and, you know, a network of people that might support them, then the reoffending rate is, well, I think it's 20% versus 80%. So
that's amazing. Yeah.
It's yeah, and that's what's the purpose of prison? I mean, I would assuming there's some stuff around rehabilitation, and sport would do a pretty good job of that. What's the feedback? What have you noticed about over time as you've gone in there from the first day? What have you noticed?
That's a good point. So in my time going in, I've delivered two courses. Feedback has generally been really positive, and from a perspective that some of these women may have never set foot in the gym or the PE part of the jail before doing this course. If football or the badge, the Arsenal badge, can be the hook that gets them in, then we're able to deliver something that keeps them coming back. That's massive. And some of the women have moved on to become gym orderlies, almost like volunteers in the gym environment, which is fantastic for them, because then they become almost role models amongst their peers. One of the women who attended the first cohort, she then became my co-coach on the second block. And about 4 weeks ago, we were able to get a release from prison for the day to come and co-deliver a social inclusion event with us up at the Emirates Stadium, which I think for her would have been an experience that will stay with her for such a long time. And she said to me herself, well, actually finding a job when you leave is hard. And if I can look at doing something that means I become self-employed, that could reduce other barriers as well. And look, we're not necessarily qualifying people to become football coaches, full stop. But it gives it for a lot of the people who complete this, it's the first qualification they may have ever finished. And that goes so far.
Wow. Man, that's pretty cool. I love that. Let's talk about some other stuff. How come Suzanne? So where's your connection with Suzanne? Let's bring Suzanne into the equation.
Yeah, of course. So Suzanne is the first team psychologist at Arsenal Women and does some other work as well across the club and with the Boys Academy as well. So, first met Suzanne kind of at a desk at Arsenal. The work Suzanne can do to put the parents on the same page as the coaches and the players, but also, I guess, build those strong relationships so you can take them on the journey with you. It just makes the environment so much better. And I've often thought that you could do a great practice, get some really clear points into the players, they leave with a real spring in their step, and that 10-minute journey in the car on the way home could unpick all the good work that you tried to do. So we try and do bits kind of like a top five questions to ask on your way home. Here are some conversation starters with your kids, which I wouldn't necessarily say every parent has adopted. But if you can just take 5 or 10 more with you than were on the journey before, then I think that's progress.
I love the Dear Mum, Dear Dad letter.
Yeah. They're using some of the letters to almost as wallpaper. So they're blowing them up, printing them really big, putting them across the walls at the Hale End, the Youth Academy. So it's there. It's just in full sight when you arrive, which I think is massive.
Yeah, I would want to. The parents to understand how the kids want them to behave so they can be the best they could be. Let's talk about Rusty and the RAF coming to visit Arsenal ladies. What's been the impact? We've done a bit of gamification video.
I think the coaches really wanted to see something different. And I feel that football can be a little incestuous at times. It looks within itself to find answers to problems and doesn't necessarily move forwards. So by bringing someone like yourself in to have the RAF there, it just gave people a different approach, some different ideas which you wouldn't necessarily find on a coaching qualification or in your typical traditional football practice. So the RAF, we had two guys come in from the RAF and almost talk about their world as developing people who are going to go out and have to make very quick, very critical decisions in really tough environments. And I think for us to be able to draw back from that, some things that we could learn as coaches is massive. So when one of the guys was talking, he was explaining how he was going through some of the training process almost down the route of being a Marine, and saying that at a point several years ago, decades ago, there would never be any feedback at all. And I kind of went away from that contemplating, is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Maybe even by someone not giving you verbal feedback, it means that you have to become more self-reliant and work out what great looks like. Or is it something where actually some feedback at the right time and the right place would be really critical for people to be able to kind of reach that level that they needed to reach? But when you're training for something which is probably one of the most intense jobs in the armed services, then I guess they want, as I say, the best of the best of the best. So they've got to set the standard and the bar in a certain place. RAF, yeah.
They spoke a bit as well about, and I've heard services speak about, actually, they exactly what you said. They deprive people of feedback. So they sometimes they're able to do it themselves, but also sometimes it's just to see how they react to, well, what are people thinking about me type stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess when you're in that intense environment and that high performance environment, that's huge, and it's a massive test of character. It's huge for the people involved. And I guess the big point for me from that day was almost what can we draw from that and bring it back into our world as coaches? So feedback for me has been something I've really thought about, to say, well, actually, what do our players need from us? Do we need to tell them? Do we need to be brutal? Do we need to be really kind and an arm around the shoulder type of feedback? Or does the type of task and practice that we put on just give the feedback that the players need anyway, so we don't have to say anything at all? I think that's a great reflection point from the day. Lots to learn and lots
to take. Give me some examples. Have you been away and gone, actually, I'm going to try some stuff based upon that? Are there any examples you can think of around that?
Around feedback?
Yeah, just curious.
Yeah, with our development program at Arsenal, we've got about 320 girls who attend on a weekly basis. So giving really specific individualized feedback on a week-by-week basis is tough sometimes. So what we wanted to do was personalize the feedback process as much as possible. And the feedback, I guess the journey of that starts with understanding what do we want to achieve in the first place? So what does good look like? So we asked the players at the in the development program to come at the start of the season with a picture of what they wanted to aspire to or achieve by the end of the year. So some of the girls were really literal with that photo of a player beating a goalkeeper, nutmegging someone, etc. Others had some more, should we say, surreal imagery. One girl, for example, had a picture of about a dozen clowns at clown school. So we checked with her on that. We said, well, what was you thinking around this? And she said, oh, well, I love football. I want to come and have fun, but it's clown school. I need to learn something while I'm here. I was like, brilliant, fantastic. Put it so nicely. But then what we do is the coaches use what the players want to achieve to be able to give them feedback against their individual targets and goals. So on the back of this sheet of paper, we've asked the girls to write something, two or three things they'd like to get out of the season. And then as the season goes on, the coaches just document it in a way. They put some notes down on that paper, and there's a back and forth between them and the players. So by the end of the season, the plan is that they've almost got this huge sheet full of which documents the conversation, but then tracks how they've developed and improved throughout the year. I don't know what printing the feedback around what really excites and interests the player is really important.
Nice, cool. And what about gamification? You seem like you've taken that and looking at your Twitter, you've kind of it's just not exploded, but I've spawned a monster.
Oh, gamification, Rusty. It's just...
I'll just tell you quickly. Just... So that session, I loved. Probably one of my most favourite ones in terms of... So I talk about it a lot. I love the bonus level. So the group that came up with the bonus... I mean, it was a really engaged group of coaches you had there that day. They were ridiculous.
Yeah, they're great in the respect that they like to think about coaching differently. And they're really open to new ideas, which is really cool. And I think they really bought in to the gamification stuff, the different things that you showed us. But for us, the idea of having different levels, different ways to win, and then teams and players being at different stages in that process in the same practice. Oh my God, it just does so many things all at once, which at the top line is really sexy. It's great. Kids love pauses, replays. The opportunity just to stop and make it harder for the opposition or make it easier for themselves. But underneath that, there's those skills about thinking, slowing the game down to give the players the opportunity to really think about making a good decision or thinking tactically about how they play, how they find out stuff about the other team, what the other team's strategy is. And I think one of the things you mentioned the other day, Rusty, was I think one of the lads, Harry, he had a challenge to nutmeg people during the game. And the team I was playing on, we kind of figured it was about beating a player. We hadn't worked out the nutmeg part, but we'd worked out something. And you asked Pete in the group, Pete, you figured that out, but how many people have you told? And it was just a penny dropping and like a light bulb turning on for him. And like everybody else in that group, oh yeah, we find out stuff about the other team all the time, but we never tell other people on our team about that. And I thought, oh God, why not? We should. So I don't think it matters what sport you coach. at the heart of that, you're giving players the opportunity to make decisions, to be strategic. It's that tactical warfare. It's amazing. It really is.
And you're now talking about tactical warfare. You're now connected with Jack Pat, and you're going to create some more stuff with Jack Pat, hopefully, because you've been looking at the practice design stuff and pros, cons, which will be good for me because I'm going to use it in Canada when you've created it. Because you were also talking, I'm going to come back to the gamification, but I also loved your analogies around the different types of feedback and the reality TV shows.
So yeah, of course.
Get us discussing, really, even just playfully, to, as I think Jack Pat's slide has done, to playfully talk about, well, why did you choose feedback like this? And what feedback did they need? And, you know, as a player, which one do you prefer? Or, you know, and just real discussion around it, as opposed to, which I often see is fairly indiscriminate, unintentional giving of information.
And one way as well.
I was about to finish that sentence, but I decided with, you know, hierarchically downwards.
Yeah, of course. No, I think what we look, it was just an idea, really, looking at maybe different shows on TV, what the feedback looks like to the people taking part in those shows, and maybe what the benefits of that is. So The Apprentice, go on, what do you think? How would you describe Apprentice style feedback?
Apprentice is pretty, it's pretty brutal. It's in front of everyone. So it's group. So one of the things I ask kids is, would you prefer your feedback individually or as a group? In The Apprentice, it's often in front of a group. It might be a slightly smaller group as you get whittled down. It's generally the stuff you're not that good at, quite frankly. So Sir Alan doesn't tell you what you're smashing, and he probably then puts you on a bit of a warning about it. So you're probably less likely to be creative. That's my guess. Yeah. That's just my experience of watching a show that my wife loves.
I guess in the, you don't have to deny that you love it too. I guess in the cafe as well, before the candidates go back into the boardroom, they have a bit of peer-to-peer feedback as well. And like you say, it's mainly negative, but they're being as honest. Are they being honest, or are they just trying to stitch the other person up?
Yeah, maybe they're doing reflection, but my view on that is they're rarely doing that reflection in the moment. So a lot of it's after the event in The Apprentice. Yeah, which other shows did you mention? Which other shows were you thinking about as forms of feedback?
Strictly Come Dancing. I think that's a topical one at the moment. So for me, Strictly, the judges, you get that range of different level of supportive feedback. You've got Craig, who probably says it how it is, more so, through to other judges who are a bit more flamboyant and praise-centred. But one big thing for me is they always give a way that the performer can improve. They always structure some kind of support to be better next time, which I don't know if many other shows on TV do that. And I think, again, as a coach, do we say something, but then do we give players the opportunity to say almost, well, it could be better if ... and give them the next level of that.
Yeah.
Take Me Out, I think you mentioned that one.
Yeah, can I go back to Strictly? My other one on Strictly I like is four people all see the same event, but they don't discuss, they then give their view. So same again, co-coaching. Often we're saying, I'm giving a 7, what are you giving? Yeah, 7 as well, yeah. Whereas actually on this, sometimes you get quite wide discrepancies. So people see slightly different things, but then we kind of collectively make sense of it. And as you said, we probably go, look, if the average is a 6, then here's a way of making it a 7 or 8, or what do you think could make it a 7 or 8?
Yeah. If the scoring was, it's a 7, but it could be an 8 if you did ...
Yeah.
That'd be quite good. Or I wonder if they gave the feedback from right to left rather than from left to right with the judges in the order they give the feedback, if that would have an influence on the others.
Yeah. And then, so Take Me Out, my favourite TV show apart from First Dates. First Dates is feedback as well.
So yeah, of course it is.
There's a lot of feedback on telly. So the reason I put First Take Me Out on is it's in the moment, like the buzzer, your lights out, that's it. It's pretty it's pretty brutal. It's rare that there's so many people ganging up on you to give you feedback. So it's rare that you get feedback from quite so many people in the moment. I'm stressed just thinking about it, because as my daughter said, if you came down the lift, Dad, it'd just go pew, 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 pew.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess you get honest feedback, or you just get people who just want to go on a holiday as well. So, the other one that sprung to mind, it's gone out of my mind now. The Apprentice. Oh, X Factor. So I think I'm not a fan of X Factor, but I always get the feeling that feedback in X Factor is really sugar coated. So actually, perhaps with Simon Cowell as an exception to the rule, but I think that people maybe just say stuff to make people feel good or feel okay about how their performance, rather than necessarily providing feedback that's going to help them be better in the future.
Yeah, so, and I'm thinking of Louis when you say that. I'm sure he's not listening to the pod, so I think I'm fine. often, you know, you're going to be the greatest singer in the world type thing, and maybe there's some unintended consequences to lots of the real early famey type stuff that occurs on X Factor, or the, you know, this is the early winner, this is the early developer, and there's definitely been some challenging cases around it. What about gamification? Where have you taken it? What's been the top stuff you feel like you've done?
I think kind of evolving pauses has been really interesting. So giving players the opportunity, or teams the opportunity, to earn more pauses, but then how they're potentially used at different phases of the session. So when I was coaching abroad earlier this year, we played a range of small-sided games with different restrictions and rewards for the players. And by the end of maybe three or four different games, if you added the scores together, it was, I don't know, 11-8. And then we could use the scores the players had built up through the game as currency. So we're going to use five of our goals. So our score is going to go from 11 down to six, but we're going to buy one of your players from the other team. So that's huge. And it gives players, I guess, it's that opportunity to be strategic and then re-strategize depending on their point in the game. So purchasing players has been one, purchasing the opportunity to make the game harder for the other team, changing the dimensions of the pitch. So the currency has been really good, and I think it's endless the type of things you can do with that. I think as a coach, it's changed the way I design practice, and it's changed the way I plan. This physically looks like, it's more about what the challenges look like within the practice, or what you have to do to get to the next level. So I guess the practice design then influences the outcome and the level of acquisition of skill or whatever it might be, rather than just trying to create technically harder or physically harder types of game. So that's been really interesting. So I think the gamification is just, it's been a game changer in so many respects.
Infinite, about the way of approach, isn't it? It's just infinite.
Yeah, it really is. And sorry, go on.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, for the kids as well, we talk about feedback, the feedback you get from them when you say, right, we've got a switch, and this team's on level three, and this means this, and this, you're on level two, and you get that, oh, wow, and the face drops, and like, oh my God, really? And you can just see in them, they just live it and breathe it, and they become immersed in the activity. It's doing everything for them that you want as a coach.
I just ran a session today at my son's team, and it was pretty wet and horrible, and they were pretty muddy. They'd run around a lot at the end. They were so engaged in it. It took them 45 minutes to go, oh, can we go and get a drink? They hadn't drank in 45 minutes, but I think it's been a game changer for me. And when I'm doing a pod with Amy again at the start of Jan, and I'm going to insist that she adds currency to the seas.
Oh, good, good, good. I think the point you just made about 45 minutes until a break, and I think you said it before, it's a test of a great practice. How long can you set something up and just leave them to play it before anyone turns around and asks you what comes next, or what happens next? And I think I've tried this before. We've been on an AstroTurf, so it's all obviously with kids, it's got to be safe, but trying to walk as far away from the practice as possible, so I'm just physically not there. I can still see everything which is happening, but just watching them from further away and see how they self-regulate and see how long they play for without needing or wanting to take a break, I think it's a great test of a good practice.
I tried it today. I always go, oh, so do you want to finish now? Or do you want to keep going? And it's good feedback, isn't it? If they go, yeah, now. So I always do it with about 10 minutes to go. I go, oh, should we finish now? And then they feel like they're getting that bit extra at the end that they, you know. And then the other one that I didn't try today, and I wish I had tried. So we were at handball the other day, and I was just saying, look, tell me about your practice. What does it look like? And one girl said, look, we only have an hour a week, so we hire a hall for an hour a week. So our coach says to us that time is of the essence. So we play, everything's through games. If we need a drink of water, we have to step out of the game and go and get it. So create underloads, overloads. But I guess the assumption is often that we all get a drink together.
Yeah. You got to make the best decision of when to go, when to leave the practice.
Yeah,
you're not going to hang around.
People are tactical around getting drinks.
I love that. Do you know what? A few years ago, linking to drinks breaks, and I've always thought, right, when you're maximising your time in a practice as a coach, what kind of things can you do to make the most of if we are breaking together? Well, how can we use that? And there was an advert. It was about something unrelated on the radio, but it was talking about it was a boxer being interviewed, and she was saying that every time she came over for a drink, her coach had written on her water bottle with a whiteboard pen, a new challenge to go and have in the next round. So we never had to say it to her. It was just there. She read it. She digested it. She went and tried it out, and it was different every time she came back. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, the kids could write challenges on each other's bottles.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd only come back and get a drink once you've achieved it.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I love that. I won't try that in Zambia because people might be keeling over.
Yeah. So where else? What else have you done with the gamification? So definitely I'm hearing the pauses and the currency have had impact. Any other stuff you've...
Yeah, a bit of a work in progress, actually. I think that day you spent with us really inspired a kind of big cohort of the coaching team. So we're looking almost into next year and how can we take that to the next level with our development program. So we're going to have effectively a gamification competition day where players are assigned different teams within their training groups before they come. We could have anything up to about 100 players taking part. And they are given a football team to almost think about the style that they play. So a Real Madrid, a Barcelona, a Manchester United, a team where almost their style of play is something that people could recognise quite quickly. And then on the day, they'll all be playing different teams, different groups, but have different... It's not just about scoring more goals than the other team or getting to a higher level. It's do we take a risk and win by scoring more goals, or do we try and take a risk by winning in this alternative method? And then it gives the players, when they come into their tournament on this day, they might be able to select, right, we're playing this team, but I can choose level 1, level 2, level 3 to play. Regardless of which level they choose, we know that they're using the time to develop in the way that we feel is important for them. But the choice is based around them, but also where they feel their strengths and weaknesses lie. So they might recognize that actually in our team, we've probably got 4 out of our 7 who are really fast. So we might choose the challenge, which is more going to get us more success if there's a speed element to it, or if it's about scoring goals quickly or whatever.
They might choose to play on the bigger pitch.
Correct, yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, we're our work in progress at the moment is our player development program gamification tournament in 2020. So,
I know Fletcher's doing some stuff like that, and definitely a shout out to anyone listening if they want to run a gamification festival tournament, something like that. I'm definitely keen to organise it because I just think it would be class. I'm curious because obviously you're working more with girls than boys. Do you still you're still noticing that it's having impact with the girls? Because often I coach boys and girls, sometimes mixed, and I'll say, look, put your hand up if you're game, and it's significantly higher proportion of boys than girls.
I think I've seen very similar response from both boys and girls whilst using this approach. I've always found that coaching girls, they really take an extra second or two to think about their approach to win. And this lends itself really, really well. Sometimes coaching boys, perhaps they just want to go and try it out and do lots of stuff before they give themselves a chance to think. Whereas the girls' approach, actually, they're quite happy to spend a minute or two working out what their plan is or working out what their strategy is. So I think it lends itself really well to both, but the girls can really, really be strategic in the way that they play.
Yeah, it's true. How's it changed your planning then? So what did planning used to look like, and what's it look like now?
I guess for me, I always used to overplan. I used to put loads and loads of content down, almost where I've got four or five different routes I could take this practice depending on how the players respond. And that's okay. And at the time, it really worked for me. But using this approach, I've not necessarily had to write so much in that respect. I've not had to plan every outcome. It's being more flexible with it and saying, well, actually, this practice could probably go in two or three different directions, and that's okay. I kind of know where I want it to end up. And maybe some of that comes with experience. But I think, like I mentioned earlier, it's moved away from designing different practice structure, but thinking about different challenges I might set, or why would I set level two like this? Why is level three got these elements to it? And the big point again, when you came with us to that day at Arsenal, about how often do you start a game and know what the opposition's game plan is? Well, you never really do. So if there's elements in there that help the players think not just about their performance and their team, but try and figure out what the other team are trying to achieve, and they're rewarded for that, that's massive. I guess one big thing though that I think is really important with this approach is managing the time you play the different parts of the games for and the scores really carefully. Because I think if you were to use the gamification and not keep a relatively clear track of the scores, then actually it starts to lose its value in some respects. I think if you set this up that we have to get X amount of points to move on to level two, you have to be really consistent with that.
Nice, yeah. And the other thing I liked, and I'll mention now, the bonus level allowed, so how it ended up was that if you scored a goal, you then had a bonus level where there was some choice around how many of your players and how many of their players you took out, and there was a scoring system. So we might go, actually, we'll take out 3v1, but we won't score many points for a goal. But actually, what we then might end up with is the main pitch where the people have left, the county ground where people have left. Our team will be underloaded, but we might just try and retain possession on there and hold out while the other team scores some points over here. But what it then allowed was some variable repetition, potentially with another coach there that was helping support them. So that's why I really liked the bonus level. I thought that was pretty classy, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think that element of we've just lost one or two players to the bonus level, we have to re-strategize, we have to come up with a different plan to just delay the other team until they come back without even having to tell the players any of this. They just do it and they figure it out themselves. And also it creates game-like situations in practice, also with a bit of pressure associated with it, which is exactly the pitches that the players need when they come to play in the game.
How do you... So someone said to Fletch the other day, Fletch, I think they're stressed because you're not stressed. So Fletch was running a session like this that would look quite messy, general direction of travel, not sure where it goes, oh, quite surprised it went in that direction type stuff. And he was faking it until he made it. Has it changed how you feel before a session?
Yeah, great point. I think I arrive at training relaxed and just open to the possibilities of what could happen, but also really curious about how the players could respond. I think curious over the last 6 weeks has been my most favourite word. I'm curious about how the practice is going to go. I'm curious about how the players will take this and the decisions they make. And it's huge. It's not about you as a coach, and the pressure shouldn't necessarily be on you. It's about the players and putting them front and centre of absolutely everything. And I guess a big thing I found is perhaps there's political pressure within coaching environments tied up with how a coach should behave, how a coach should do things, where they should stand, who they should speak to, what a traditional practice should look like. And it doesn't have to be like that. I was reading a little of Bielsa's book, The Leeds United Manager, and he sits on the side of the pitch in his technical area on something which looks just like a beanbag. And he was challenged on it. Well, why do you sit like that so low during the game? And he said, well, I'm in a better position to see the game from the eye line of the players, so I can understand better the types of decisions they're making. So I'm in a better position to help them when it comes to it. Brilliant. Now, look, I wouldn't sit down in a training session all the time, but I think actually putting yourself on the eye line at the level of the players, you start to appreciate better why they've made certain decisions, and then you're probably closer to make to you're a closer point to help them move to the next stage, rather than you're stood in almost a bird's eye view, seeing everything before it's happened, being able to stop and adjust rather than letting the players figure it for themselves. So for me, when you talk about the way I feel or kind of present at training, I think I like to spend a certain amount of time sat on the floor, which I know isn't conventional, but actually I find really effective. I like to position myself in loads of different places around the field, whether that's bang in the middle of the practice, so you can have that drive-by intervention with a player without having to stop the whole game, or standing by the goal, so when someone scores, you celebrate success, or chatting to the goalkeeper, which I think probably 7 times out of 10, they don't necessarily get any coaching points in a general coaching session because they're just the goalkeeper. They're not integrated in the other things that you're delivering. So I personally feel, and one of those big things that has been a bit of a realization for me this year is actually, why do we do the things that we do? There are different ways of approaching it, and some of them can be really effective for the kids we're working with.
Any of your coaches finding this hard? So people you work with who don't think like you, do they exist? And if so, what are you doing?
I think some of the coaches, by all means, the coaches who work in my team, I'm not asking them to mirror that. You don't want 18 Tom Hartleys on a football pitch. That would drive everyone insane.
But
I think it's about them feeling really comfortable about the type of coach that they are. They don't have to live up to a certain stereotype. They can be the best version of themselves in a coaching environment.
Yeah, authenticity would be pretty cool. And what are the, so talking of 2020 and the festival, and what's the goals for Tom Hartley in 2020? What's the things you're looking forward to working on, getting better at, improving?
I think for me, being in an environment, developing other coaches is something I want to spend loads of time on. Coach education, being in that environment for 2 or 3 years, but to go and have an impact on people who will have a bigger, wider impact is massive. So stretching myself, developing my skills in that area, I think is important. I'm fortunate, I'm humbled, actually. I've got a place on the UEFA license, which is something I've aspired to do for as long as I can remember, really. And for me, that I know will stretch and challenge me in areas that I need to develop in. So that technical understanding of the game and taking that to the next level, I think is going to be massive for my development. And I just think just continuing to give things a go and put myself in that environment of almost feeling, big word I love at the moment is just that vulnerability as a coach. It's not necessarily feeling like you have to get everything right all the time. It's just trying stuff and seeing what works and what doesn't. And I'm really excited to just keep just finding my way with all this, because there's an old saying that the more you know, the more you realise you don't know. And I really like that mantra.
I'm definitely feeling that at the moment. And you're going to have to do all of that with less sleep.
Yes. My wife is currently 3 days away from being due, so Christmas will be different this year.
Right, that's cool. Should we finish with some one-worders?
Okay.
And actually, we're going to start. The first one is Christmas.
Baby.
gamification.
Awesome.
Magic Academy.
Trailblazer.
Take that. Arsenal.
Futuristic.
Coaching.
Vacation.
Google.
World leading.
Play.
Human.
Richard Cheatham.
Balloons.
I love that. And last but by no means least, Prison Project.
Or inspiring.
Yeah, mate. I am inspired by it. I think it's and as I've said to you lots, I think you're doing some cool stuff. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'll see you tomorrow at Google. I think that's your wife in the reflection in the window in the wrapped around her on the blanket. So, hope you guys have an awesome baby stuff. Delay it till after Google.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a pleasure, mate. And thanks to Suzanne for introducing us. I'm enjoying our chat. It's good work.
Yeah.
Have a cool evening.
Thanks, Rusty. Take care.
Cheers, dude.
Bye-bye.